It is just about 8:09 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
And I am Gina Madrid.
And we're going to spend the rest of the show today taking a hard look at the transit system that aspires to knit this region together and often seems to do a lot of work driving us apart. We're going to talk about BART.
Do you feel like there's ever been a time where you've been profiled on BART?
Sure, but kind of minor things.
For the simple fact that I'm black with dreads, yes.
When you go to sit down and somebody moves their bag or...
You're walking behind someone of another color and you have to be mindful of yourself. I don't want to walk too close, but then I don't want to seem like I'm stalking them, so...
It kind of tugs on their bag to make sure it's close, like you're going to...
That was a bunch of BART passengers speaking to our intern, Justin, shortly after Nia Wilson was stabbed to death while waiting for a train. Now, you may have picked up on this. There is a big race gap in how people feel about BART. The thing is, this system is a lot of different things to different people. It is how some of the best paid tech and finance professionals in the world get to work. It moves janitors and security guards and cafeteria workers in addition to those white-collar workers. It's also one of the only places that people who have been made homeless by rising rents can get out of the elements during the day. And we all ride the same trains and use the same stations. What makes one group feel safe can feel very threatening to another.
Do you feel like there's ever been a time where you've been profiled on BART?
Sure, but kind of minor things.
For the simple fact that I'm black with dreads, yes.
When you go to sit down and somebody moves their bag or...
You're walking behind someone of another color and you have to be mindful of yourself. I don't want to walk too close, but then I don't want to seem like I'm stalking them, so...
We're going to try to find the right cut there because obviously that was a repeat of what we just played. Rod, can you try to go to the third cut you have?
Do you feel like there's ever been a time where you've been profiled on BART?
Sure, but...
Okay, well, our hard-earned efforts have gone to waste. Anyway, it probably doesn't help that data recently released by BART shows that 2/3 of the people banned from the system or subject to police use of force are black. Or that one of the initiatives BART staff put forward after the stabbing death of Nia Wilson was to increase funding for fair enforcement officers, cops whose job it is to bust people who were too broke to get a ticket, or that one BART director even floated the idea of putting facial recognition technology inside the BART system, the kind of technology that has been shown by independent assessments to have a high rate of false positives, particularly on African-American faces. So we thought this would be a good time to take stock of where things are with BART and of the choices facing the system. Over the course of the hour, we are going to bring you more voices from the trains, and we will take your calls. But first, we want to introduce the people who will be answering them. With us in studio is Rebecca Saltzman. She is on the BART Board of Directors representing District 3, which is a jagged cross-section of stations here in the East Bay. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And at our entrance and on her way into our studios, joining us momentarily will be Latifa Simon, who's a BART director representing District 7, which is the other side of the jigsaw puzzle that is the inner East Bay lines. Rebecca, let me start with a really big picture question for you. I think a lot of people who track police and race in the Bay Area still have the memory of Oscar Grant seared into their minds when they think about BART. My question is, how much has changed since New Year's 2009?
Absolutely, and that makes sense, and I think we should all keep the memory of Oscar Grant in our minds, and I know we all do at BART. And quite a bit has changed. Before I joined the board, after the death of Oscar Grant, BART made a lot of changes to its police oversight system and to how the police department operates. So prior to that, there was no outside oversight besides within the department. And now we have a citizen review board that is appointed by the BART Board of Directors and an independent police auditor. So people, if they have complaints about the police department, can go to either of those two bodies, make those complaints, and know that there's an independent body to look into them and to see if there has been any problematic behavior. And then within the police department, quite a bit has been done to reform the practices. So we've made a lot of changes. There's still more to do, but I think we're heading in a much better direction.
You can hear taking a seat next to me, Latifah Simon, who is BART director of District 7, representing the East Bay. You are also the only, as you pointed out to me, African-American person in position of leadership in the BART system.
Well, I would say on the elected BART board.
BART board, fair enough. So let me put that question to you. What's changed since Oscar Grant?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, I think for the listeners out there, thanks for listening. It's important for Rebecca and I. Rebecca, it's actually her fault. She encouraged me to run for the BART board of directors. But it's important for folks to know that BART board members aren't staff. We run for office to represent the voices of the folks in our districts. We have rather large districts. I'm in three counties and represent 19 cities, and Rebecca is right behind me. She has a huge district. Being an elected with no staff, our job is to listen and to hopefully make policy decisions that better not only the experience of the writer, but the system as a whole. We have a 40-year-old system. Every system in the Bay Area, I would purport, has a problem with Black people. So let's just start there. Every system in the country, as public system, has struggled in their relationship with Black people. I got off a plane last night at 1 a.m. from being in the South all weekend and visiting spaces and places where people were lynched by law enforcement. So these conversations are not, we can't be ahistorical. And while it is almost the 10th year anniversary of Oscar's murder, we know that the BART police has taken a mirror to itself and had to look at what happened that fateful night on January 1. But in no way can any of us say in our system that we have reached any kind of mountaintop, right? That there's so much work that's happening. I believe that there's leadership that wants to turn this tide. But I think we haven't seen the conclusive numbers of everything from this study, but BART knows, SFPD knows, Berkeley PD knows that they have a duty and a responsibility to look at the inherent violence in their systems, and that they have the responsibility to work that stuff out. And us as board members and our oversight committee and this community and the police themselves and our general manager, we know that we cannot have one more incident where young Black lives are taken. I think I can say we all agree on that. It is the how. Mm. Mm.
So I was shocked when the Chronicle last month published what Rebecca was telling me just before we went on air, are numbers that are furnished regularly in the course of BART oversight on a monthly basis, showing that 2/3 of the people who've been banned by BART are African American. 2/3 of the people who've been subjected to police use of force mm-hmm. are African American. That is 5.5 times the rate at which Black people actually ride BART. One of the reasons that was so surprising to me is because of the response we got when we reached out to BART's official spokespeople about the question of profiling in the system. And the response we got from one Jim Allison was a blanket denial that any profiling happens among BART police. What do you think accounts for those numbers?
And, you know, I think Rebecca shares some of my sentiments. As policymakers with day jobs, we're looking at these numbers and we're both, all the folks of consciousness on the board are shocked. And we also look at the parallel numbers of other transit institutions across the country. And again, we know that these numbers are not an anomaly. Right. And I know as a young person born and raised in the Bay Area that Black kids are not the only ones jumping the turnstiles. I know that Black homeless people are not the only ones suffering in the station. The disparities, I feel like, are systemic. But again, I can say that, and it's our job. We get a full and comprehensive report of the stops of the ban data. What you have in front of you is not conclusive data. We're going to get that data in September, and we're going to pour all over it. And I would encourage folks from the community to be voiced not only around the police data. It was actually Rebecca or Director Salzman who said at a meeting when we were voting on budget that it's important, like any transit institution across the country, until it can pay for itself, we have to charge folks for getting on the train, but you can't have disproportionate fare enforcement. And so one of the things that she did, and again, following that leadership, she said, I'm not going to vote to increase the staffing for fare enforcement until we understand how these stops, or do they disproportionately target African-American or people of color, disabled folks. We're going to get all of that data, and we're going to use that data to make decisions. In some ways, our big, massive, yet limited role is to be very data-centered at the same time using our moral compass to support BART and moving forward and with its safety measures. But you can't have it... I will say this, you, for the folks who are saying we need more police officers, you can have public safety and not annihilate the human rights of a people. And I think that that is our job on the board. Are we done? No. But I mean, again, as a Black person, I hear stories every single day in my mailbox of folks really struggling with their relationship with our system. And that's why we have to stay on board, because we have to bring those voices into the boardroom. And I can't wait to listen to some of your listeners and understand what they have to say. But we all should be mad. We should be mad at every public system that hasn't got it completely right yet. And we keep pushing to figure it out.
Well, so after Nia Wilson, young African-American woman, was stabbed to death at MacArthur BART while she was waiting for a train, some of the reaction, predictably, was the system needs to be better policed.
Mm-hmm.
Her family members said, mm-hmm. if this man who was evading fare had been prevented from evading fare, she would still be alive. So how do you balance the impulse to create safety through policing against the reality that many communities feel less safe in the presence of police?
I have an answer, but Rebecca, you want to go first? No, I mean, we could both go back and forth.
I think it's clearly challenging, but it's a challenge we need to face. And I think what's important is that we, as BART directors, not be reactionary and be thoughtful in the solutions. And so when a package was brought forward to the board, I thought it was not well thought out enough, and I thought we needed a little bit more data.
Describe what the elements of that package are, because most of them are still pending, right?
Yeah, most of them are still pending, but it was a bunch of things, some pretty simple, like increasing the hours of our police officers, and then some of them went towards kind of technology and had some privacy implications with a new digital camera system and a new kind of way of tracking people. And this package was brought forward, I think, because of immense pressure from the community. People mm-hmm. really wanted to see something done, and that's very understandable. But we need to be thoughtful about the impacts of these new solutions, especially the ones that are really new ways of doing things, and if they're going to cause more problems, and how these things can be implemented in an equitable way, and can they, and what kind of privacy protections do we need. So we're going to have some more hearings coming up to really look at the implications of all of these proposals. And I think that's what we need to do, is be thoughtful and think about the trade-offs as we implement safety solutions.
I think Rebecca's right on. I went with about 1,000 mourners from all over the Bay Area to say goodbye to that beautiful young woman. That family has the right to say whatever they feel. Mm-hmm. And I have a 22-year-old, beautiful, young, I want to say innocent, but thoughtful, wonderful, smart young girl. And I expect when she is in any public space for her to feel safe. I have a 7-year-old. I expect for that child to be at a public park and feel safe. What I know is, again, 90% of our job is listening. That 10%, that policy, the policy component of our job is taking one data and facts, but more importantly, not being reactionary and at the same time listening to folks who are suffering the most. And no community is a monolith. You have parents, Black and brown. I have previously incarcerated fathers calling me every single day and said, you need to hire more police. And I have other folks who are saying, that is not the way you should spend public dollars. And so the Black community is not a monolith. But one of the things that I know for sure, where we are clear, is that folks who have a historical, long, long, deep history with state violence don't want state violence. Folks want to feel protected. So what we know is, if you think about LA in their transit system, they just implemented a very controversial system where you walk onto their trains, right? You walk onto their BRTs and you are immediately scanned, your whole body. You look at Lisbon and in London and in Dubai, we know that public spaces are no longer safe for many folks. And so governments are struggling and trying to figure out the best way to monitor safety. I got to tell you, I mean, to your question, I'm not going to say, and I would not say as a mother and push back on what that family, how that family thinks that Nia's life could have been saved. That is their opinion. I respect it. And I also think that lifting up those ideas and listening up other ideas is what we do. I think you can have, and we haven't seen it yet, but that's what we're working for justice, right? We haven't seen completely unbiased policing in our communities. But if we can imagine a system where folks could actually feel safe and have folks of all creeds and all ethnicities feel safe under some kind of safety and security, that's kind of what I want to get to. In San Francisco, BART has worked with an organization called Bayview Hunters Point Foundation. They have hired young men and women from the community, mostly reentering citizens. And now those men and women, they sit in our elevators at Powell and Civic Center. And there's no crime in those elevators since those brothers and sisters came on. And, you know, we are introducing not only what the district has put forward in terms of safety measures, but I also do think that there's other things that we can do. Community members should, in fact, have a role in our system. Muni has an ambassador program. When you get on many of the trains in communities of struggle, you'll see young men and women with green coats, and they're greeting you. It is a deterrent for folks to act a fool, and they don't have guns. They are folks who have been in communities forever and ever and who hold ground and hold community. We've seen the ambassador program work in Chicago. We've seen a component of an ambassador program work on the MARTA in Atlanta. And so we have to be smart about policy solutions. I don't think it's just more cops. And should you have more cameras in the parking lot? Probably so. But again, to Rebecca's point, we have to be extremely thoughtful and also honoring the folks who are losing people in public systems. I think that it's a complicated puzzle, but that's what our task is, to figure it out.
Well, Latifa Salmon, I want to try again to play some of the tape that Gina went out and got on the trains putting
this question. Thank you, Gina, by the way.
Balancing safety and policing and community safety in the BART system. So here's the first question she put to passengers.
Do you feel safe on BART?
I would say no.
Not at all.
No, I don't ride BART for that reason.
I do. Yeah, I feel safe on BART.
I do feel safe on BART.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I feel a relative unease pretty much anywhere I go. But BART is, if anything was to happen to me, it would more likely be on BART.
Gina, fair to say every person saying they felt safe was white?
Right.
The second question that Gina put to passengers on BART is what solutions to that lack of security might be like. Here it is.
Do you feel safe on BART?
I would say no.
Not at all.
No, I don't ride BART for that reason.
I do. Yeah, I feel safe.
Okay, obviously that was the wrong cut. We are going to try to get the correct one queued up for playback, and I'm going to wait for a thumbs up for our board operator before I toss to it again. You're listening to Upfront on KPFA. My name is Brian Edwards Tiekert with Gina Madrid. We're joined in KPFA studios by Latifa Salmon. She is BART director for District 7. And Rebecca Saltzman. She is BART director for District 3. Here's that second cut on safety in the BART system.
Do you feel safe on BART?
I would say no.
Not at all.
Yep, still not the right cut, guys.
I do have a question for you, Latifa. Uh-huh. So I have experience, you know, not just once, but, you know, I ride BART all the time. What makes Bart make the decision to go and get someone out of Bart when they're sleeping?
Mm-hmm.
And why do they send so many police? Like, there's like this incident where I saw someone sleeping in the back of Bart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's people that you actually see regularly, mm-hmm. you know, they mm-hmm. use Bart as their house, mm-hmm. you know, at certain mm-hmm. times. But this particular time, there were like 8 to 10 cops who mm-hmm. approached this man.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about safety and definitely. Feeling safe in Bart, mm-hmm. that did not make me feel safe. Mm-hmm. When I see 10 people coming into this man mm-hmm. already holding their guns on the side or mm-hmm. tear gas, you know. Mm-hmm. And what makes them think that that's right?
You know, the cool thing about also being on the BART board is I'm not staff. And so I get to say things like, I don't think that was the right thing to do. If you have one homeless man who's sleeping, I don't know all of the issues that surrounded that stop. But I have never driven a car in my life. I'm public transportation dependent. So I've been on BART thousands and thousands and thousands of times in my 41 years on this earth, and I've seen those interactions, and I don't think that they're right. I have also seen interactions where a woman was like running from her abuser and there was nobody around, right? And so again, how do we imagine safety, and how do you all including, you know, the folks who are listening and you all in the studio, push us to reimagine what that looks like. It looks like folks who, for me, who are houseless, who end up in our tunnels all over the world. Is that a law enforcement response, or is that a community health response? We have folks who are sleeping in our tunnels. We walk over them, and many of them oftentimes are very close to death, but it has become so normalized that poverty is criminalized. At this point, we know that in the downtown, which is district, not in my district, District 8, there are mental health workers at BART is now hiring outreach workers to work with community organizations and the police to not deal with, but to work with folks who are the most ill, right, in our communities, the most ill. I don't believe it should just be a law enforcement response. That does, to kick somebody out of any public system because they need deep help is, we know, not a systemic response. What we want and what we've talked about, Rebecca and I and other progressive members of the board, is how do we look at the question of safety as not just kicking people out of our system, but really providing opportunities for cities to take responsibility to house and to treat their people. When communities, when local governments make a decision that some people deserve housing and others don't, or there's just simply not enough, they end up in our tunnels. And so not being a social service organization, institution, with not getting tax dollars for humans outside of them riding the train, we have to deal with some complex issues of how we provide intersectional support for folks who both are riding the trains and folks who are living on the trains. It's a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I get on every morning at Richmond, and there are people who were riding the trains all night. There are folks who wait for that first train to open to get warmth.
Mm-hmm.
We know, you know, I am involved with developing a coalition of folks who are fighting for folks who have to walk from Santa Rita Jail when they get out in the middle of the night. We lost Jessica St. Louis less than a month ago. BART is the spine of the Bay Area. So all of the perfect storms that are happening in communities, we will see them bubble up on the streets of our tunnels, in our cars. So,
Well, Latifa Simon, we're going to want to talk about some of those storms with our listeners when we come back. Listeners, we'd like to hear your experiences with BART. What do you experience when you're riding the train? How do you feel the system is balancing safety and justice? What questions do you have for your BART representatives? Give them a call, 1-800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008. Your questions for Rebecca Saltzman and Latifa Simon, they're both on the BART Board of Directors. We'll be taking your calls when we come back after the news.
I'm Max Bringle with these headlines. President Trump insists that his White House counsel isn't a rat like the Watergate-era White House attorney who turned on Richard Nixon, and he is blasting the ongoing Russia investigation as McCarthyism. Trump, in a series of angry tweets, denounced a New York Times story that his White House counsel Don McGahn has been cooperating extensively with the special counsel team investigating Russian election meddling and potential collusion with Trump's Republican campaign. Trump tweeted, quote, "The failing at New York Times wrote a fake piece today implying that because White House counsel Don McGahn was giving hours of testimony to the special counsel, he must be a John Dean type rat." Trump wrote, quote, misspelling the word counsel, but I also quote, "allowed him and all others to testify. I didn't have to. I have nothing to hide," unquote. The New York Times said it stands by its story. Unknown attackers fired shots at a security booth outside the American embassy in Turkey's capital early today, but U.S. officials said no one was hurt. Ankara's governor's office said six shots were fired from a moving car towards the embassy compound at 5:30 a.m. local time. Three of the bullets hit the gate and a window. The statement said the investigation was ongoing and the suspect or suspects have not yet been identified. U.S. Embassy spokesman David Gaynor thanked police for their rapid response and said no injuries had been reported. The U.S. mission is closed this week as Turkey celebrates the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Adha. A group of elderly South Koreans have traveled to the border with North Korea ahead of family reunions with relatives in the North they've been separated from since the Korean War. The week-long event beginning later today at North Korea's Diamond Mountain Resort comes as the rival Koreas boost reconciliation efforts amid a diplomatic push to resolve a standoff over North Korea's pursuit of nuclear weapons. Most of those taking part are elderly people who are eager to see their loved ones once more before they die. Housing rights advocates have joined with low-income renters in San Rafael to organize against drastic rent increases scheduled for next month at two of the city's few remaining affordable properties. It's partly cloudy today in the San Francisco Bay Area, highs in the upper 60s to 70s, overnight lows in the 50s. In the central San Joaquin Valley, sunny and hot with highs around 100. I'm Max Pringle. News returns at 10 on KPFA.
It is 8:35 in the morning. The program's up front. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert with Gina Madrid. Our guests for the hour, BART directors Latifa Simon and Rebecca Saltzman, each of whom represent a chunk of the Inner Core East Bay system in BART. We've been talking about the balancing act between racial justice and safety and policing that is consuming discussions at the BART Board of Directors in the wake of the killing of Nia Wilson. I want to go back before we go to your calls. To voices from the trains themselves. Gina was spending a lot of time out there with recording equipment, and I think we finally got the right piece of tape to play.
Do you think that having more cups will make you feel safer?
They would actually make me feel much more on edge.
I believe there should be more of a police presence on the trains.
I feel like they're doing surveillance. They're not there to protect me or folks like me.
They should be on the trains all the time, so their presence is known.
No, you just made me start sweating. I got anxiety. No, more cops don't make anything more safer.
I'd say overall, yeah. I'm not exactly someone that like super dislikes the police. I know they're kind of there to help sometimes.
Cops make a lot of white people feel safer, I feel. And I feel because they're writing more, because they're gentrifying our neighborhoods, they want more cops to come so they could protect their persons.
Again, voices from BART train stations in the Inner East Bay over the course of the past couple weeks. If you have questions for your representatives on BART, give us a call, 1-800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008. Rebecca Saltzman, I want to put that last note to you. Had a BART writer talking about gentrification and BART. It almost seems baked into the system's DNA. It was built to move commuters largely from the suburbs, largely to the financial district. It's now laying out a lot of money to extend to San Jose. It's hard to see that doing anything other than raising rents in Oakland.
Well, in terms of the extension to San Jose, that's actually Santa Clara County paying for it and other funds. So that's a project between BART and VTA in Santa Clara County, and they've kind of taken the option to build it there, and it's their project that we're helping with. But in terms of gentrification, it's a real issue in the Bay Area, and I think it has a lot to do with how we've planned our land use, and particularly land use around BART. So San Francisco in particular has built up a lot of jobs around the BART stations, but not necessarily enough housing to house all of the people who work in those places. And so that's necessitated a lot of people moving to the East Bay, not just to Oakland, but further and further out now to find homes that they can afford. So we clearly need to have a lot more housing and a lot more affordable housing near BART. And that's something we're working on at BART. We passed a plan a couple of years ago and set a goal for 20,000 new housing units at BART stations by 2040, with 35% of those housing units being affordable housing. And we're well on our way, and it's important that we keep working on that. We're not going to solve the whole problem by ourselves, and we need to work with our communities that we have stations in to make sure they're building enough housing as well.
Latifa?
I mean, what Rebecca said is right on. BART's 40-plus year history, there was actually a book that was published this year by someone who had worked very closely with the system, really talking about basically the two generations of BART and land use policy and gentrification and redlining and West Oakland and the 7th Street corridor. All of these facts are, they're facts. They're not arguable. That anytime you have mass transit in what I'm now calling sort of this Uber economy, the market is definitely advantageous to poor people. And why public transportation is so key to our justice conversations is key. Who has the access to mobility around the Bay Area? Why I ran, I know it's why Rebecca ran and is trying to, has been recruiting folks to be a part of the political discussion about public transportation for some time. These conversations, and you should see, our board meetings are pretty empty usually unless there is a spark. And we want to actually change that. We want to change the ways in which our community speaks for the right for public transportation and equity. You know, I was in West Oakland for many, many, many years. I'm from the Fillmore, got pushed out of San Francisco, moved to West Oakland, was there for 15 years. I just moved to Richmond. West Oakland is no longer affordable. I have two kids. I'm a single mom. I'm about 10 minutes in a car from BART every morning, and I don't drive. So if you can imagine the tens of thousands of folks who don't have access to mass transit and what they go through every single day, BART is a part of that, and we have actually a lot of land. And so it's public land. And so when developers and community come together for projects, those projects come in front of our board. And so when we're talking about 25,000 units of housing plus, why the BART board is so important, we are making land use decisions. But Rebecca and I actually were two of the five members of the board who voted no on a Livermore extension that would have cost nearly over $1 billion, because we understood and we knew that was going to be mostly on our backs to raise and get that money when we have a system right now that doesn't feel safe for folks, and for folks don't feel like it's completely reliable. So investing available resources into the core is extremely important, and investing resources into community voices to make sure that when we do move forward with development projects, that they're affordable and people can actually access them is key.
Let's bring some of our callers into the conversation. First on the line, we have Susie in Oakland. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning. The comment about the board meeting, it would be great to have reminders that there's a BART board meeting. It never crossed my mind to attend. So that would be something that KPFA might mention in the programming about the board meeting. But anyway, I was calling to ask about the BART police. What type of vetting system is done for the BART police? That seems to be where the problem lies, and that if you have police officers that are fair to all riders, we'd have a much better system.
Who wants to take that one?
I can take it. So BART police, and again, there's always more that I can learn about all of our system. I've been on the board for 20 months now. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Director Salzman, is that BART police officers go through the same academy as your police officers. There's Hayward Academy, there's Oakland Academy, San Francisco, and they choose to apply to BART. We don't have our own academy. And if a BART, if a cadet is interested in becoming an officer, the vetting takes about 6 months. Interestingly enough, what I understand, we are down 30 police officers. Is that still true? Actually, I saw some of the data just the other day that we've hired up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think it's 27 or somewhere around there now.
So even getting a police officer on takes close to half of a year. And I do think because of community pressure, you know, after the Grant shooting, after the murder of Grant, let me be clear, there was a call for not only the oversight board, but for very, very intensive processes and training around desperate impact and racialized stops. Again, way more work to do. But that vetting question, I think every police department in the country is struggling with how to really get out bad apples, folks who actually want to love on folks instead of hurt folks.
But I want to jump on something Susie said, because I think it gets to the core of a lot of misunderstandings about how policing winds up with such awful racial outcomes in this country. She said if the police treat everybody fairly, that should be okay. But if you have the police getting called disproportionately on people of color.
That's right.
And from that point forward, they are enforcing the law completely fairly.
Yep.
It's still a garbage in, garbage out problem. You're going to have a racist outcome. And from everything we know, passengers police their co-passengers of color much more aggressively than white passengers.
Wait, say that again?
Police have to be trained not just to, like, eradicate their own bias, but to recognize it in the people who are calling.
Oh, absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. You see kids on BART, and they're super happy and jubilant as children, and I've seen the police getting called on them because they're boisterous, as children should be, given they're 16- and 17-year-old black children. So they appear to the folks who call the police on them using our BART app as dangerous. I feel like there should be a fine for folks who call police on people who are just living. There are instances in public systems where people are there to hurt folks. Mm-hmm. And so I always ask the public, then what do you want and how do we sculpt the structure so that you can get the help that you need? I learned just recently at our Embarcadero stop, we have paramedics on site there. When you're running a system that puts, you know, over 500,000 people plus in the tube every single day. And let's be clear, there are a lot of folks who, on a mass level, want to hurt people. There has to be some kind of level of security. But going back, how do you have safety and security and it not violate the human dignity and the human rights of oppressed people? That is BART's problem. That is every police department's problem in this country, and I would say most parts of the world. But these are issues that I feel, and I know Director Salzman feels, and our listeners feel, that are attainable. It's about holding accountable both electeds, us, and also staff members who hire our police chiefs to make sure that they're doing everything possible, that when there are murders and there are deaths or there are disproportionate numbers of black and brown people being stopped, that we have investigations that are transparent and that are clear. And I do feel like while investigations take a really long time, there are investigations of the Tyndall murder happening. We are waiting for the DA to hear what she says. None of these fights are over. And when we talk about policing, there are people who are listening who have been deeply affected on both sides. So I want to hear more of what folks want to say.
I mean, one thing is policy and, you know, learning new rules and new ways. But how can you teach a cop not to be racist? You know, that's the bottom line. You can teach him as much things as you want, but if there are still racist cops, you know, within the police department or within BART police, that's something that must be addressed.
It has
to be
addressed.
How do we address that?
It's interesting. Dr. Evren Hart from Stanford, her study on Oakland Police Department, I'm not deflecting, but one of the things that she found from Oakland the police, while there are less officer-involved shootings, the number of black young people between the 18 to 24 who are handcuffed and put on the side, and of course are let go, are drastically disproportionate to their white counterparts. I believe that racism is deeply, deeply, deeply in the DNA of law enforcement in this country. How do you weed it out? I think it's exactly what community does in the Bay Area. The community doesn't stand for one politicians who let it go, and it doesn't stand for folks who turned a blind eye, who are staff and who hire these folks. And, you know, we have to sit and we have to hear and we have to listen and we have to act on how we don't govern the police department. There's some oversight, mm-hmm. but we don't completely govern, but I think we would be, I'm not going to be on a board where we're turning a blind eye to disenfranchisement and complete abuse that is not being checked. I know that hopefully she's listening, but this month, Kriya Gomez is a community activist and organizer in the Bay Area, and I'm appointing her to be my appointee for the our police commission. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes community folks, it takes elected folks, and it takes folks who wear the badge to take the oath of doing no harm. And Gina, I think we completely agree with each other. I think our politics are similar around you. I don't know if you can outteach racism. I think you have to fire racist.
Right.
Hmm. Let's go to our next caller. We've got James on the line from San Francisco. Good morning, James.
Hey, good morning. I'm a occasional BART rider and transit enthusiast, and I've noticed that, BART has to start doing a better job within its own for the employees way before it can go to the public, because there's been a number that been killed on the BART system. Like on the last two personnel that were working on the tracks. And also, you know, BART has gotten like New York City transit subway and Chicago. Those are the two like oldest subway systems in the world.
James, I think we got your question, but I'm going to leave it there because your phone connection is really hard to listen to. So Rebecca Saltzman, the question is worker safety on BART.
Yeah, worker safety is incredibly important. And the tragedy of the two workers who died on the tracks in 2013 is something we will remember and work to make sure it never happens again. And since that happened, a lot of protocol in terms of the work on the tracks has changed. So workers cannot go out there anymore when there are trains operating, even if they're not operating during regular service. So the protocol has changed quite a bit. And we are working closely with the BART unions on safety, particularly on the track, but also in the maintenance facilities. And it's important to keep both our workers and our riders safe.
The phone number, if you have questions for your representatives on the BART Board of Directors, 1-800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008. I want to go to a little bit more of what we heard from people on the trains. And this is some tape that was collected by our intern, Justin. Here's his first cut.
Do you feel like there's ever been a time where you've been profiled on BART?
Sure, but kind of minor things.
For the simple fact that I'm black with dreads, yes.
When you go to sit down and somebody moves their bag, or
you're walking behind someone of another color and you have to be mindful of yourself, I don't want to walk too close, but then I don't want to seem like I'm stalking them. So
it kind of tugs on their bag to make sure it's close, like you're going to steal something or maybe don't want to sit next to you.
I mean, I've never had that experience. I can't say that I haven't seen profiling.
As soon as I got here, maybe a couple months later, the Oscar Grant thing happened in Fruitvale. So to be honest, that like scared the crap out of me already. Like I'm already not from here and y'all already killing people.
In case you couldn't tell, those were all person of color passengers on BART. Because Justin noticed this trend, he decided to apply the wokeness test to white passengers. And here's what he's got. Play Justin's second cut. Okay, we're having trouble getting that cut. It is not our lucky day. 1-800-958-9008, 1-800-958-9008 for your questions to your BART representatives. Here's the second collage from passengers.
Do you feel like there's ever been a time where you've been profiled on BART?
No, I don't think I have.
I think I've seen other profiling on BART.
A small amount of profiling I've had has been more like young guys pushing me aside. But that's not, I'm not sure that's really profiling as much as taking advantage of size and gender.
Do you think other groups of people get profiled on BART?
Well, it seems like BART police are usually the offenders in these situations, and it seems like it's usually black men that are on the receiving end.
I think the main thing is someone who looks like they come from poverty. But I also think it's a racist society we live in, and so certainly people of color.
And the people getting profiled are often might look like they're like homeless or something, or sometimes it's like kids that like to come on and do like their performances and stuff, and during commute hours a lot of the commuters look annoyed.
Now I should mention this is all on the Richmond-Fremont line, so this is not like the white suburban East Bay.
It's changing though. Have you been on the Richmond-Fremont line?
Yeah, fair enough.
It's my district was gerrymandered in some senses years and years ago. It starts at Hunters Point, goes south of Market, then goes up to the through the tube to West Oakland, way up to Richmond. And it was thought of as a black district for a very long time. And I am on that train every day. And you see, to Rebecca's point, I was corrected the other day. I shouldn't say out-migration. I should say the pushing out to Contra Costa of people of color and working class people. But you also have folks who want houses and yards who make $300,000 a year and they're not 30. And they're now moving to white folks, and folks of wealth are moving to spaces that weren't traditionally hospitable to folks of wealth, from West Oakland to Richmond. And so the dynamics of the Bay Area are definitely changing. But I think that there is no place you can go in the Bay Area where black young people will say that they're not nervous, or their parents of law enforcement.
So here, and that collage that we played for you is a fair cross-section of what Justin got in the trains. Mm-hmm. We didn't try to game it to make it look like there's a consensus that doesn't exist. People of color felt profiled. White people were aware of profiling happening. And I guess my question is, it seems like there is a big gap between what the passengers understand implicitly and the conversation that happens at the board level when you have board directors calling for facial recognition software to be installed on the cameras in the station, when you have BART's general manager proposing a significant increase in policing resources to deal with safety issues. Can you kind of explain, you know, the political structure of BART? What shapes that conversation? Why does it seem out of sync?
People elect their BART representatives and oftentimes don't know who they are, so that's really important, right? Mm-hmm. And I think everyone should go to BART.gov and look at the nine members who are representing your system. It's almost a $3 billion system annually. And it is complicated. There are the folks who are the anti-privacy folks, and I had also high-ranking members of the NAACP locally, statewide, and nationally calling me and saying, cameras are actually good for black people, because when a black boy steals a wallet, the police are going to run after and find the first little black boy that they see. We know historically that that's been the case. I don't care what police department, what mm-hmm. training. Mm-hmm. Cameras can, for us, and this is a few statements. Cameras for us can vindicate our people. And we've never had privacy. And so on a system that's 100 plus miles long, we have consistently been targeted. Perhaps if there is cameras that actually are digital, where our faces can be shown, Black boy A doesn't have to take the rap for black boy B. So what I know that it's a complicated conversation for many folks. Privacy is an issue. Surveillance is the issue. What does safety feel like for different folks? And again, we know a year and a half ago there was much attention being paid to BART app, the BART app being used disproportionately by white passengers to tell on black folks. I'm also clear, again, as a BART writer, there are some times where, as I am on transit all over the country, I don't feel safe. And oftentimes it's not just about moving to another car or getting off the train at 10:30 at night. So those are realities.
Let's try to bring in one more caller before the hour is through. We've got Sergio on the line in San Francisco. Good morning, Sergio.
Good morning.
What's your question, Sergio?
Yes, all this talk about, you know, police, racism embedded, or, you know, embedded bias. I haven't heard any talk this morning about, you know, maybe BART could require racial sensitivity and cultural training before they bring people on board the system.
Oh, they're doing that.
You know, if
we have that. I mean, our police officers are given like most police departments, you know, since Grant, since Mike Brown, are given training in anti-bias. And again, I think that our, if you look at the policies with BART police, we're probably, you know, light years ahead of other jurisdictions. Is it perfect? No. But yeah, there is that training. Rebecca, did you want to say anything about the anti-bias training?
Yeah, and also the existence of anti-bias training does not mean the absence of
That's
bias.
Right. Absolutely.
I think we're going to have to leave it there. Latifa Simon, Rebecca Saltzman, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The last voice you heard was Latifa Simon. She is BART Director representing District 7. Also with us, Rebecca Saltzman, BART Director representing District 3. You can find both of them on the BART.gov website, along with their full contact information if you want to give them feedback on the votes before the agency. That does it for today's show. Upfront airs weekday mornings at 7 a.m. We post information about our topics and our guests online at kpfa.org, where you can also dig through our archives, subscribe to the show as a podcast, and connect to us on social media.
If you'd like to give us feedback or something you heard or suggest something for us to cover, send an email to upfront@kpfa.org. A big thanks to everyone who makes this show happen.
Our producer is Corinne Smith. On the controls, Rod Akil. Hosts are me, Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
And me, Gina Madrid.
Also Antonia Yuhas and Janine Etter. Our intern is Justin Gold. Clara Sophia Daly has just signed off as a summer intern. A big thanks to her. A big thanks as well to Mitch Jezerich and Eileen Alfandari. If you want to get in touch and you can't send an email, particularly if you are incarcerated, put a stamp on a letter to Upfront KPFA 1929 Martin Luther King Jr. Way, Berkeley, California, 94704. Stay up and stay tuned. Democracy Now! Is coming your way in 30 seconds at 9 o'clock.